Felicia Stefano, or shall I say, happy Friday, everyone. Welcome to the Data Protection Made Easy podcast. Today is episode 17, season 2, and we are talking here about GDPR news. I am joined by Kane again, finally. Welcome back.
It's lovely to be back, Kane. I took a sabbatical. I had a week off, sue me, unfortunately. I decided to let someone better take my place for a week, to be honest with you. So hopefully everybody got to enjoy that. But we was back talking about the news, which is great because I love talking about the news because, you know, it tends to be where we're all a little bit more passionate, unless we're talking about SARS, I suppose. Mm-hmm. But we talked about some really great pieces in the news this week, mainly tailored around the King's speech and some of the bills that are looking and being passed around government at the moment, namely the police reform bill. We have the digital access bill in relation to the digital IDs and a couple others in relation to cyber and the NHS. So very interesting stuff. We kind of picked that apart. We had a little bit of a look into the police as well and about their live facial recognition software, which is a little bit of an area for contention at the moment. But we're looking to see, believe this weekend, its first actual deployment out on the streets. So really, really interesting stuff, Kate. What did you enjoy about the session?
Yeah, I think that was a brilliant discussion around the facial recognition. Obviously, loads of opinions were shared. It's a nice topic because it's good for us practitioners to put our brains working and to think about the pros and cons about it. I think, again, I feel that I'm using this word a lot lately, but I feel that we are in the dilemma about potential balance in clashing rights and freedoms in here, even the democracy itself, in the chilling of the usage of facial recognition. In the other side, we definitely have increasement of violence, the environment of scared and frightening environment about this, all the political things going on. But on other news as well, we spoke a little bit about when property data becomes personal data. We did some comments around this article that was shared internally and discussed a little bit how far should we go in identifying what is information that is actually relatable to the individual and what is the personal data as a definition. But I hope you like the session. We will leave it to it and have a good weekend, everyone. Thank you.
Enjoy, guys. Happy Friday, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Data Protection Made Easy podcast. We've got a GDPR radio session here for you today. So again, we'll be taking a look at the news from the week. It's been a little bit of a while since we've had one of these, actually. Because I think we've just had so much other content that we've wanted to cover, which is fantastic, but we've, kind of neglected the news a little bit. So have a little jump into the news and we'll have a chat about that this week. So in terms of housekeeping, as always, you will know that these sessions are recorded in order to obviously us publish them out on social media platforms and whatnot. If you don't want to exercise any of your rights, our lovely assistant Eve has just dropped that in the chat for us just for you to have a look at. Again, with the AI bots, Eve will be scouring the people in the session and removing any AI bots that she sees. Again, from feedback for the community, we don't tend to like those too much. And I think that is it. There is one DPP centric thing that I wanted to mention in relation to our Doer event, which been talking about a lot. We did sell out, and as part of selling out, we've kind of done the rounds. Just check with everyone, confirm that they're coming. We had so much sort of, kind of overwhelming positivity to the event, which is fantastic. But we've went around and confirmed with everybody to make sure that, we wanted as many people there who actually could be there, basically.
Yeah.
So we did end up going out to everybody, confirming. We have had a few dropouts, I think 4 people who are unable to make it now. I think people who have maybe accidentally bought more tickets as well. I've seen a couple of cases. We do have a little reserve list on the waiting, and we're currently going around asking those guys if they're also able to make it at this given point in time. But if anybody else does want to still come down to our Doer event in Manchester on the 28th of May,
not 25th,
not the 25th of May, then
you know, please, you know, get in touch or complete the form. I think Kate's got it. Oh, yeah, she's great. Yeah. She's good like that, isn't she? So if you do still want to come, get it whilst you can, because I can't imagine we're going to be waiting around on those numbers any longer. But if you can't get a ticket, we'll bob you on the reserve list and we'll get in touch if there's a opening. Right. Kate, how's your week been?
I think that's the everything my brother said is exactly what I wanted to say. It was a very quiet week, I must say. A lot of things going on here in DPP, obviously more around the duo, loads of things around training, which is always quite exciting as well, internally and both internally and externally for clients.
Mm.
I've been actively helping Jasmine about these new projects that we are doing around AI platform. It's quite interesting, actually.
Interesting.
It's been really, really interesting to be able to explore the AI world now in practice, like to be able to see. So more or less, the to give just a couple of details, like it's a platform, it's still not launched. So we are testing it to make sure that everything is compliant.
Mm.
As we know, and I'm sure that we'll talk about that in the King, about the King's piece as well, but there is no AI field at the moment, nothing around AI. So it's really hard for us to kind of assess something and to cross-reference and to make our judgment only purely based on ethics and morals and guidelines, and obviously around the 10 principles that I'm not binding because that's just principles. But yeah, it's been quite a challenge.
It's a tricky piece of work, isn't
yeah,
it?
It's, yeah.
But it's fun. It is awfully
fun. It's really fun. It's really fun.
However, when you have so many other things going on and then you have to do the AI stuff, you're like, oh, no, not something else.
And then here we go to the... I do love the piece of the side of the research side. You know, I love
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
But I feel that in our field, you always find more problems and more problems and think about, actually, this is a big problem. This could be a good approach. However, what if this happens, and here we go with the depends.
Yeah. It's a lot of it's a lot of jumping about with AI, isn't it? There's always a kind of devil's advocate element. You played with a lot of stuff, but
it was okay.
Week. A bit hectic, to be honest with you.
We are really needing this party, aren't we?
me and Kate are potentially in need of a little bit of an opportunity to let our hair down slightly, de-stress. But I did have a really interesting day yesterday. I was on training yesterday, and I was being trained for, you know, it's been really nice. Actually, I've been able to get out and learn about some different stuff a little bit new and unaware to me. So I spent a little bit of time learning the art of training people, which is, you know, probably which has been maybe something that people might have seen me do before in terms of maybe some of the training stuff that I do, as well the lovely team of mine that I train. But, you know, it was very much helpful, actually. I picked up some really great stuff from there that I want to take away. So, you know, it's really nice for me to go out and do some of these courses. I'm hoping to trickle it down to all sorts of lovely people, external and internal. So it's...
Can't wait.
Yeah, very exciting. Very exciting. So on that note, what has been happening in the news, Kate? Seemingly quite a lot in the past couple of days.
I think probably definitely the King's speech, I think that will definitely be the big point of things. So I know that you have done some more broad research about it.
Yeah, I did have a little bit of a look today in terms of the speech itself. I haven't actually listened to the full speech, but of course King made a speech on Wednesday in relation to a list of bills and draft bills that the government have been considering. Obviously, there's a little bit of an element of you know, playing a little bit of the one touch here, because there's a lot of, you know, a little bit of parliamentary, you know.
We need to be independent.
there's a lot of stuff going on at the moment, politically speaking, which is potentially could have an impact on some of these things that are being discussed. But in terms of what has been looked at, it seems to be that there's a lot of initiatives that are being pushed forward in respect of some of these bills. As Kate had mentioned, no AI bill currently being discussed. That is slightly disappointing, yeah. to be completely frank. I mean, you know, I really was expecting to be hearing something soon. I think especially how at the moment the news is very AI-centric, mm-hmm. especially with things in relation to stuff like the Claude sort of like mythos and stuff like that, some of the stuff with OpenAI that we've been seeing in the news. So I was really hoping to get a little bit of good news in that regard. But there are some other things that we have seen that have piqued interest. Yeah, some little bits and pieces. So we have the police reform bill has been dotted about in relation to the facial recognition software mm-hmm. that the police want to roll out. Now, interestingly enough, we're going to talk a little bit about that a little bit later, actually, because seemingly the police are looking to go live quite soon in its first instance, the use of this recognition, which is mm-hmm. Very interesting. And I think potentially relatively contentious and, you know, a little bit scary. So we do have that, which is positive, because again, it's a very, very high risk area of the law at the moment, and something that is obviously being watched very closely. So I'd be interested to see what happens with that in relation to the facial recognition stuff. We have also heard in relation to its commitment to cybersecurity and the resilience bill. Sure, great, all good stuff. But apparently there have been some news in relation to the digital access to services bill in relation to digital ID. Mm-hmm. Now, I know this has been something that has been sort of passed back and forth at the moment, and I know everybody kind of collectively has a lot of views on it, but it does seem like something that is pushing its way forward and will seemingly be something that is happening.
Yeah, I think on the digital access service and all the digital ID, the fact is voluntary is obviously the big point to be highlighted in here.
Mm.
I appreciate the nature of it, and I know that there are loads of countries, and remember we did an episode dedicated to this,
mm-hmm.
and there were a couple of countries that India was one of them, Denmark and others, Estonia, I believe, that they already have these implemented, being some of the services actually required, so mm-hmm. they are legal, they need to be downloaded by every single citizen to be able to access or to book whatever.
Mm.
I have my reservations, as always. I feel that on the nature and the big point of things, I think can be quite helpful. It can be useful being in a centralized system. Obviously, everything that we've done, all the research and every assessment that we have done, seems that all the due diligence has been made, all the security sides of things, because obviously I think that's the big point, isn't it? If there is any hacker, like, or any cyber attack that decides to attack, I don't know, one of the government sides of things, is what does that mean then in terms of like all these apps and downloads? Because this will not be directly controlled by the NHS, for example, any public service. It will be the government itself as a centralized service to be able to have access to this.
Mm.
I think it's on the security side that I feel a little bit more concerned, yeah. And I feel as well, I'm really reluctant about the potential functions creeping here.
Mm. Well, that's the big thing, isn't it?
I feel this can be changed definitely dramatically if we are actually now, you need to be able to do something, you need to have this.
Yeah, once the sort of inherent benefit is tied to it and
yeah.
the sort of government is seeing the sort of potential further uses, you know, currently it is voluntary, which is great. You know, how long until it's not? What and the implications of that are obviously really potentially quite severe. It's bound to have a little bit of a target on its back, you know, cyber-wise, mm-hmm. I imagine. But, you know, I don't want to be too cynical about these kind of things, because maybe sometimes it's our perspective to always look at, you know, the risk, which can lead to a little bit of a negative connotation. It may well be a good thing, as long as it can sit within the realm of its current principles and not, you know, devoid from that too heavily.
Yeah.
You know, it really depends. I mean, the big thing that, as you're already saying, Kate, is the function creep piece, isn't it? Is how long and how much does this tie back to you and what you're doing as an individual?
Absolutely.
And if that remains minimal, then, you know, hopefully it's not something that we should be overly concerned about.
I think definitely something to consider, and I appreciate the nature. And to be honest, if it's actually at this very moment, the way he's built and the all the functions and all the things they are thinking to actually to use it is very helpful. And as you're mentioning, like, I'm super up to anything that is practical, anything that is dynamic, anything that is easier for me to achieve certain purpose.
Mm.
My thing, I think, is because we do all these podcasts and we are up to the news and we know everything around to all these things, or we are keeping up to speed about things. And normally the problems normally come from the government and come from the authorities and normally come from those entities. So my trust, unfortunately, is not my highest trust and hope on these things, you know. And I'm a little skeptical because, as you mentioned, we'll talk about the facial recognition on police. We'll talk about a couple of other things that are directly linked to the public authorities. And I just feel that there is such a link now to the more surveillance, to the more monitoring, to the more...
Oh, definitely.
You know, like to have some bits from you and you feel, okay, I am giving you this. If people are aware, because that's another question, are they aware? But if imagine that they are aware that you are giving this all from you, they will always tell you the practical side of things is actually make your life easier. But is it balanced? That's my question.
There is a slight trend at the moment, isn't there, in relation to a lot of government schemes and, and the inherent implication of surveillance and data protection that ties to that, you know, namely, you know, definitely with the police. You know, it does seem like people are trying to use data in more effective ways, which again comes with its own list of concerns, doesn't it? I mean, if you did just look at the stuff that happened with the Ministry of Defence, you know, that is enough to sort of scream, you know, a couple of alarm bells and stuff. But, you know, it's something that I think a lot of people are going to keep a lot of eye on. I think the government will also be aware how important it is to probably get this right, because, again, you know, the sort of heat that was on them from the MOD stuff may not enough, but the heat that was on when, with the MOD stuff is a warning sign to take this stuff more seriously. I suppose on the note of, I know we're talking about cyber and I suppose threats to reputation and threats to businesses, apparently in a recent report done by an insurance broker, had identified that cyber risks or security risk have become the primary concern for UK execs for the first time ever. So surveyed about 2,000 companies with about 250 plus employees in the UK, and found that 46% of business leaders are now prioritising cyber threats, which is a significant increase from 20% only 3 years ago now. And they seem to mark that roundabout a similar area for economic and financial issues, about 44%, and then compliance at about 40%. So this is it's an interesting statistic, this, and I feel kind of two ways about it. One, I mean, it's probably very easy to say this is a risk that we're aware of. It doesn't actively mean you're doing anything about it necessarily. It could just mean you're a little bit frightened about it, to be honest with you, which I think is, you know, probably rightly so. You know, at the moment, I do think there is a little bit more of a buzz in the media around potential threats to cyber and what the implications are of that, especially, as I say, recently in the past couple of weeks when we're looking at things like Claude that are identifying vulnerabilities for websites, you know, for the good and for the bad. You know, it's great to identify vulnerability on your own aspect if you're doing vulnerability scanning. You know, that's going to help make your website more secure. But, you know, in malicious hands, it's a pretty dangerous tool, isn't it? But is it a positive thing that people are thinking about cyber and security more? Absolutely. I mean, I imagine for a long time, a lot of DPOs, a lot of people that work in cyber as consultants or maybe just as advisories in business have probably felt like a lot of their cries have fallen on deaf ears a little bit. But, you know, we continuously seen in the news with things like the hacking group Shiny Hunters, is that right?
Yeah.
Who were obviously looking at targeting
the names,
looking at targeting bigger businesses, public businesses, you know, and potentially holding that data to ransom, and the implications that's had in the past couple of years for businesses, you know, Land Rover, Jaguar, the Co-op. There is more. I'm struggling, but there are definitely more. It has proven that, you know, that there is stuff to consider. There's things to take seriously. M&S, I think that's what I mean, instead of Co-op.
I'm not surprised, to be honest, with the statistics. I think it's quite expectable, like to be one of the the major risk right now, because I feel like people, as you are mentioning, like people are more aware. These things that make it are made completely available are public. This is happening to massive organizations that you go when we go every day on a daily basis. So people are actually do know and are aware of this, and it's actually scary because we don't know what will happen. So I'm not sure if you do. I'm sure you remember. Actually, we had a client here that. Charlotte. I'm not sure if you do remember the case where he had like dealing with SaaS, but actually all those SaaS came from actually a massive data breach that happened and the cyber attack, etc., linked to the breach. Anyway, the problem around the question, like all the questions that came from the individuals and even from the client himself, was what will happen with the information? What actually will they do with the data, with the information that they got from us? Because I think that's the things that are more scary, isn't it? Is the fact that is completely invisible to you. You can track the fact that actually this happened. You can even probably block the any access when you obviously identify that attack from you. But then you are actually not aware. Where is your information? What happened with it? What will they do it? Like anything that will make that. And I think that's the scary side of things. One thing that I've noticed with clients is as well, when we are talking about like training and awareness, always the question is more around the data protection, but now I can feel the trend to be more identified, the cybersecurity training as well. So being part of the training kind of a framework, which is quite nice to know. And even on audits in our side, we're feeling like a massive flow as well, which is always good for us, I guess. But in selling security audits, so people and organizations are feeling, okay, so definitely we do might have a problem or not, but we want to test it and we want to know exactly how we're doing on the security side. And not surprised.
People are paying attention. And, you know, if more people start paying attention, other people feel more pressured to pay attention. You know, at least from the perspective of people that are processors, you know, a lot of competitive element I feel now comes with how rigid your cyber seems, how organized you seem from a compliance perspective. I see a lot more people pushing back on processors actually now with concerns in relation to GDPR, which is great. You know, I think that's a position that we need to be in, because not only does that sort of enforce and help in terms of your accountability responsibilities, but it sort of trickles down to them. If they're losing business because of that, then you know, is that an inherent benefit, because they then may be required or feel the urge to make a change, which is great. And then maybe hopefully in a couple of years everybody's, you know, singing off the same kind of hymn sheet. But again, I think that's fairly hopeful.
Yeah, but I think you actually are touching a very good point. Is every single time we do, normally we deal more with controllers rather than processors. Mm. And actually, I requested from the client perspective, normally control in this sense, to carry out any due diligence on our these processors and to actually make our judgment based on information made available and any contact that we may have with them and any additional information to make, okay, a judgment on what do you think, basically, in the end of the day, always justified with Article 28, etc. But we is a judgment call. What do you think? What is your opinion? And one of the things that we always do is obviously like information available, always is as well a test and to see if there is any news that we should be worried about, any kind of review, any security concern, even red flags that we feel like in a questionnaire. Okay, we have this. Okay, can you come to us then with your report? For example, loads include vulnerability tests and penetration tests and all these IT systems controls, audits annual. Okay, can you give us then as a good sample? Like, can you just provide us with a report or a couple of samples just for us to be feel reassured? Or we are ghosted or ignored or actually the provider was like a summary with not even being signed off. It's like, okay. So is that something definitely that we do look into? And he's just making a good point on that.
No, definitely. Bit of a task with the processors, isn't it, sometimes? Especially trying to get answers from them. It's to task.
It's a joyful task.
It makes me sad that they don't respond to me sometimes. You know, just want to have a chat.
Right? Like, just to kind of like make you your life easier as much as possible. And now we just ghosted.
It's one of those things, isn't it? But I know we mentioned facial recognition, we mentioned the police reform bill.
Yes.
It does very seemingly link into another piece of news. Yeah, it's red hot in here, isn't it?
I'm sorry, just the aircon just is on and that he's really warm.
So, in relation to the police, basically they want to look to deploy live facial recognition and drones, interestingly enough, for the first time this weekend at the Unite the Kingdom March. In central London. Where about 50,000 people are looking to attend. And I think it's at the Tommy Robinson protest in particular. I think you saw like the spearhead for this march. And they're wanting to use the technology around the specific borough of Camden in areas that are likely to be used by the attendees rather than the actual route of the protest, which is fairly interesting. So it's not going to be directly at rally points, but it's going to be in areas where they may expect them to be. Or where attendees may be. I don't know how they'd characterize that, to be honest. Potentially areas where there's more risk, probably, either to like public harm or to like damage to other elements, potentially. I'm not 100% sure.
Yeah.
But effectively, it is, you know, it comes with a little bit of a precedent of concern, I suppose. You know, it's clear that some of these marches sometimes and some of these protests can get a little bit on the ugly side, and there is definitely potentially a risk of physical harm to potential members of the public in some cases, and to property damage and general disruption, right? So they've seemingly decided to make this decision based on that risk, because there is a similar march happening for Nakba Day, that might be wrong, so apologise if it is, which is a pro-Palestinian march that's looking to take place, but it won't be used. So I don't know if they are sort of taking it as a, which they should, in terms of a risk-based approach and identifying, like, this looks like something that garners more of an area for concern, potentially. Yeah. Again, is not too sure on what the rationale is in terms of how they would decide it, but seeming like they have decided for this march in particular. Okay, what do you think? It's a weird one, isn't it? I don't know how to feel, to be honest.
I think it's a weird one, and I think that as always there is pros and cons. We can't close our eyes to the big picture in here. I appreciate that obviously the main reason is potential physical harassment, physical detriment to individuals' life. Unfortunately, currently, they've been quite a violent environment, I feel, worldwide, but as well in the UK. And I think this obviously is a response to that as well, alongside with the King's Speech, etc. But this is a response to that environmental violence, and is to try to proactively try to avoid this and to have some handles, because sometimes in human resources and human forces in police, it's sometimes, unfortunately, it's not able to do it. However, we have the other side, and I quite feel with the current environment, with these wards and the political challenges that we are facing in the UK currently, is I'm not sure if it's, I appreciate the nature, but I'm not sure about the timing. I'm scared about and risks around discrimination.
Yeah,
there is risks about potential because it's facial recognition. Bearing in mind that facial recognition is not a normal CCTV. It's facial recognition. We are identifying individuals, obviously, that are already probably certain information.
And they're trying to, the intention is to potentially tie it to offenders, right?
Yes,
people who may already be marked as something.
Yeah, they are trying to get them, but I'm scared about discrimination. I'm scared about the potential biometric data now is being challenged and being checked when you are in your free time to exercise your free speech and the what you believe and your political beliefs, you know. I feel
is that a worrying step? Is that there is a potential implication that we could be infringing in some regard on people's freedom of speech.
Yes.
Which is, you know, not a very good thing, of course. And but, you know, I really see your point, Sarah. You know, as a member of the public, mm-hmm. someone who doesn't want to be involved in these kind of marches or these kind of protests, especially kind of when they kind of go the other end and they can get a little bit more violent through some people.
Absolutely.
It can be really worrying, and the police can only really cover so much with that much, you know, going on. It really can be quite difficult circumstances sometimes, mm-hmm. You know, and I really appreciate that. So I really can understand the need for it, but it feels like in a sense of potentially kind of like almost treating every, it's like kind of goes away from the innocent until proven guilty thing where
yes.
you're kind of treating everybody like a potential suspect for a crime, which I don't, you know, I feel ethically a little bit weird about. But I think from the perspective of protecting the public, I really understand how that could be super necessary. You know, you don't want to get caught in the crossfires of these things. And that's the intent. The intent is pure, of course.
Yeah.
But the application of it is potentially where it muddies the waters a little bit.
Yeah, I know. I completely understand. I completely agree with you. I think in the end of the day, it's always about the purpose. And it's always about how we do things and by design, how we actually manage these tools, because these tools are here and we would be not smart enough to not use them. We just need to use them the right way. I'm just really skeptical about the fact that we are just chilling about these facial recognitions. Now it's easy. There is facial recognition, CCPs, everywhere. And as I mentioned a couple of episodes ago, this is a trend in the UK. I appreciate that the UK is one of the like most like influential countries in the world. So obviously the violence in the environment, in the political perspective, and even the violence, unfortunately, that happens is necessary. It's not the same, for example, in Portugal, that it is in principle is forbidden. We don't have CCTVs anywhere because we kind of prioritize the privacy of the individual. Obviously, there are pros, there are cons, as any thing.
I didn't know that. Yeah. I didn't know you don't use CCTV.
Yeah, we don't use it. We have just in very specific areas that were highlighted as very dangerous, that normally they are associated with, unfortunately, and again, I have my own opinions about it, but where immigrants are more in there.
What about
times like the rates of violence.
What about like crime? How do you identify crime, like burglary and stuff like that?
We have police officers in the street.
But how many?
It's the thing, isn't it? It's just because you may have like these resources, okay, and you obviously you have these implementation on the crimes and crime areas that were identified as in their own like statistics and numbers and algorithms as actually an area that is potentially have more violence than the other areas and the remaining areas, and therefore some sort of additional tools are necessary.
Mm.
However, we, in those areas as well, there is always police in the streets. It will never be, for example, in Lisbon. There will be obviously dark areas as anywhere. There will be always, unfortunately, places that there is no one in the streets, but in principle will be always at least one or two police officers in the cars, in the streets, just going around, because it's just it's not even saying that that is right or wrong. I actually feel, unfortunately, that we could actually use these tools because they are available to be used.
Mm-hmm.
Is again the purpose, because for me, if we are just chilling the way we are, just how easy now is to put a facial recognition CCTV or any tool in the streets right now, and is easy as that. No consultation, I feel, that was made, aside from obviously like the relevant governmental individuals. But is it like the data protection side of things and even the privacy of the individuals even considered? And how is it considered? Because I know it is obviously part of a balance exercise, no.
Yeah.
Sure. Like we have the potential violence, we have the potential threat to the person. with Sarri's mentioning, like, you're not even involved and you can be caught in the crossfire 100%. But it's actually the other side even considered, because we cannot ever forget that all these tools will be storing this information somewhere.
And I guess the justification, and I would absolutely love to talk to someone who like was actually involved in this. It's a shame I don't know more people like that, because I'd love to pick their brains. But
yeah,
I'm guessing they're saying that the interest of the public severely outweighs, well, maybe not severely, but it outweighs the interest of maybe people who aren't going to be as violent. They see it as, you know, almost like a for the greater good kind of thing, which, you know, I understand to an aspect.
Mm-hmm.
I would be really keen to see what people thought who didn't have much of an interest in data protection or didn't care about, I guess, as much about data protection, and to understand the public perception of that, other than from, you know, freedom of speech perspective. I would really be interested to see what they would like hone in on. Again, it might just be the freedom of speech thing, and you know, this sort of piece on innocent until proven guilty. But I would really like to know. Maybe I'll conduct some research.
Yeah, go for it. I will probably be on the other side, you know. Like,
yeah,
it's just I don't know. I'm just I appreciate this so much, but. I know that there is so much violence and crime, and I swear to God, like, I know now with these political things going on around left side, right side, etc., around immigrants, unfortunately, and bearing in mind that I am one as well, so I appreciate that, and I know that I'm not the majority of the scope that these references are about, but I am still under the immigration status. And I appreciate the violence and some sort of any threats. And I know, I really know. But this always existed in obviously different, completely different escalations, I know. But this always existed. And my only concern is, are we even considering alternative methods? That's the only question. Because even if the answer is we have, and however this is the outcome, I'm fine with it. It's just, I don't feel that that exercise is even... if that done anymore, and I appreciate it was probably done in the beginning, but it's just now it's fine. Now it's always with the purpose of trying to avoid preventing the violence, preventing this, preventing that. But what about our rights? What about our privacy?
Sometimes you can go to
mental rights, isn't it? Like
too far. If you try to prevent stuff too much, it ends up causing other issues in doing so.
Absolutely.
And you're right. I guess there's a line again. I'd be so keen to sort of have a look under the hood and look at the processes that have gone in trying to get this to be implemented, you know, because I assume a level of diligence has been taken. I'm just so keen to know to what level and to how involved maybe other parties may be in identifying the need for things like this.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it is a piece that we will probably continue to talk about as it becomes relevant, you know, as when this march does occur, which I don't know when the march is and in terms of the dates, maybe we will hear a little bit more in relation to its success or not. We will see.
We'll be there to look into
it. I suppose, but before we wrap things up, Kate, I've seen that you put something down in our little bit of notes that I presume you might have wanted to talk about.
We'd love to, actually. I think, and this was actually inspired. I checked his news. It was Phil that shared with us. And I was quite inspired because I think this will be quite helpful for housing sector in, obviously, like more a majority. And as well on our... SaaS event. This was one of the questions that were made during our event, and I thought, you know what, I know that surely the person that asked this question will be within the audience, so I'll put this around because on the news, and I will definitely share the link to it. So it's around to understand when property data actually becomes personal data. We cannot talk about this around without talking the Ashley versus HMRC case, where this is definitely not about property valuations and any property information, but it actually is to make the point that the personal data definition and as a concept is actually quite broad and is on purpose, because it's be able for you as an individual or practitioner to be able to actually arguments and to understand if in a case-by-case scenario is personal data, yes or no. So this article I'm actually referring to is around the property information in specific, for example, building, and they actually make a quote quite interesting, saying a building can become personal data. And when I read this for the first time, I thought, wow, all right, this sounds a little bit too much to think about. But actually, it's arguable because we do have a flat number, we have access logs, we have maintenance issues, we have packing records. And actually, none of this directly seems to be personal information because we're talking about just numbers, just random information that without being linked to anything else, is just exactly what it is, random information. However, if it's actually related to the living person, in this case, living the resident or the tenant, it can actually become his personal data. And all the article is around, for example, using the information like property valuation, rent history, tenancy conduct records, maintenance trends, etc., that can be very relevant for situations as evictions, antisocial behavior investigations, fraud detections, that can be actually their personal data. And then why am I referring this? Because I'm not sure about your, like, how you experience some of any SAR information, like the gathering side of things. But I'm with two clients, I'm actually heavily involved with it. And we built a process where one of the steps is obviously the gathering information and for myself to contact the relevant department. And the response that I have automatically is when the data subject actually requests for this information is, this is outside of the scope of the UK GDPR because it's actually not even personal data. I always feel very reluctant when we are talking about any maintenance reports. When, for example, you can see the report and you read the report, it's true there is no direct link to the individual. However, what you have is a date, you have an address, you have the current resident, and then you have scenarios such as because of some sort of...
Ashley versus HMRC, I think.
Yeah,
let me find it.
You'll find that, yeah, perfect. Sure. There is in the notes. But when we have this report, when there is any link to actually the individual, this can actually be very relevant for us because it's not just about direct links, it's about indirect links and can be related to the individual. So this will be always personal data and we need to be and to do a case-by-case scenario. So with these reports, for example, even if there is no direct links to the individual itself, but you can know that certain maintenance or maintenance issue is actually required because of the individual's behavior in dealing with the property itself, or because, I don't know, we had some conditions and a very dirty individual with no hygiene whatsoever and caused some damage to the property and therefore this report was required. Is it debatable, I think, that if it's not personal data, yes or no, even if there is no direct identifiers?
Yeah.
I think it's just more around we need to bear in mind two points. One, that the organizations need to dismiss just the information that is just and definitely just but property versus personal data.
Mm.
And the other bit is, okay, is this personal data? Yes, but it's, again, reasonable and proportionate to be included within our disclosable data. Mm. Is it exactly this that you want to? Is this part of our research? It will come up, yes or no.
Yeah.
However, we need to as well to make the other side of things. That is, we need to be careful with the inferred data and we need to be careful with related to, because if we actually open the scope so much, almost everything will be personal data.
That's the problem, isn't it?
Everything will be personal data. So we need to be careful with this.
I'd say that's the potential issue for housing. You know, do you open up that kind of worm sometimes? You know, it seems like a lot of requests not these days necessarily, but a lot of requests made to housing providers can relate to some kind of issue that inherently links back to the property in some kind of way, right? I think that's probably reasonably fair to say. I know that in recent sort of case law, we kind of looked at these things, and especially in regards to breaches, we look at, is it personal data to the controller? Mm-hmm. And I think that's kind of the antithesis, the kind of purpose of maybe what we want to look for when we're searching for your property data. You know, is this personal data to us? If we give this and read it and understand it,
mm-hmm.
you know, does it relate to them? It probably does in some cases. Again, do you want to tie yourself in not searching through everything, going through everything? Again, there's a level of risk that we have to play with these kind of things, because, you know, that can significantly increase the volume and impact that SAR has on an organization.
Absolutely.
And, you know, again, just because we may ascertain it potentially property data as maybe being personal data or inferring personal data, which again is very difficult. You know, if you want to start drawing those lines and connections in, oh, it might infer personal data. Mm-hmm. You also might be there all day trying to search for all the data. And that's the difficulty, really, isn't it? Is, again, you've got to tie it back to what's reasonable and proportionate. And that's fit to your business, unfortunately. It's not fit to any set and determined rules, because the law is not that kind of a thing. Yeah. It would be really nice if it was, but...
It'd be easier than to do.
It would.
Yeah.
It would,
yeah.
But to a certain extent, it would be nice. Well, we won't have much of a job, really, would we? but I would say to an extent, you have got to consider what is there. You've got to consider the property data that is there, at least. Don't just rule it out. I would never, ever suggest ruling anything out of a SAR, no matter what you think it is.
Yeah.
You know, you've always got to take that solution as a business, really.
This rule runs around that and around of being reasonable and proportionate. We need to always make sure as well that there is still a meaningful connection. There is a realistic identifiability on the individual, or are we actually doing a lot of effort to try to create these connections and identifiers within the individual itself. Mm. And in the end of the day, it should exist still a sufficient relationship with the individual and the controller on their side, because again, we are asking for these reports, but if the tenant is no longer a tenant, depends a little bit, probably debatable, our effort. I don't know. I think it's a case-by-case kind of scenario.
Risk and context, isn't it?
Yes.
Risk and context always. Oh. But yes, I think on that note...
I'm so sad that we did not spoke about the TikTok.
Oh.
Well, we'll definitely speak next time.
Sarah, is that phrase going to catch on? Risk and context. I just came up with it. If it's going to catch on, I'll trademark it now, nice and quick. And I guess I'll get some T-shirts out or something. But no, I think it's a... Bugger, Sarah. Bugger, he's every day. I've stolen from
you. You are saying that you created that, and apparently you were...
Sarah, I can only apologise. You've got there way before me. I'm very much behind the curve. But... What a fantastic saying, I must admit. But on that note, guys, we thank you again for joining us on another Friday. We hope that you have a lovely weekend, and we will catch you all next week.
Thank you very much. Have a good weekend.
Bye.
Bye.